The lights are on red. We're away.
About motorcycle road racing, and this is Jules Cusack and Jim Race in episode 189. It is Friday, August 7th, 2009. Let's talk about MotoGP and other stuff. And there's not much, obviously, to talk about from in terms of racing because we had no races last weekend at all. And but Jim got a interview with Eugene Laverty last week, which is very interesting. So we're going to play that in a few moments. Do you want to do a quick lead-in for that?
Sure. As we know, it's the quiet season for Superbike right now, and frankly for GP2, and this time of the year kind of kills us all. It's not as bad as the winter. But yeah, I talked to him on Saturday, and we chatted for a bit. Not a real long conversation, but wanted to get caught up because I hadn't talked to him since right after Miller. And I think you guys will enjoy the interview.
Cool. All right, so we're going to play that now, and then Jim and I will be back immediately afterwards.
Hello, this is Jim Race for MotoGPOD, and I've got Eugene Laverty on the line with us. It's currently Saturday, August 1st, I believe. Welcome, Eugene.
Thanks, Jim.
We haven't talked to you since right after the Miller race, so I thought we'd get caught up. First off, if we can chat just a bit about Misano, because that was a pretty good race for you as far as a good start and a good run. But if you can run down that, I know it's been a while, but tell me what your thoughts are since then.
It was a great race between me and Cal in the end, but I'd say I had my best moment and my worst moment of the year in that one race. At the beginning of the race, I'd come from 13th to the lead in just 2.5 laps, so I'd never passed as many people in a world championship race as quickly as that, but then I was disappointed on the last lap that I handed the race to Cal. I wasn't aggressive, selfish, sat back because I had a slight advantage in aggregate, but it cost me. Had I just raced it as a straight race, it might have been a different outcome, but it went well. So I went to concede 5 points. It was, again, me and Cal out at the front.
And that was, again, as you said, you know, it was kind of the last lap that things got away from you, but you didn't lose a lot, but clearly you're wanting to hang on to Cal pretty tightly. And as we moved on to your home race at Donington Park, things were looking pretty good. You know, you guys had a very solid qualifying, and while Cal seems to be running very strong at this point in the season, everybody kind of looks at it and says, okay, well, the season is up to these two. Walk me through Donington Park if you could.
I think everybody's got a bit excited about Cal's pace recently, but I think we have to remember it's only been the last two races at Burlington and Brno where he's been faster everywhere else. I've been a match for him. Brno, we knew the reason because he had tested there for 2 days before we even arrived, and he was quicker in the test than any of us managed all weekend, so he was a long way ahead. And Burlington had really seen the quick form at his home round. He knew the circle well, and it's the first time he's gotten to a track this year and knew it well, so I think that's why he was strong there, but there's no reason why we can't be on a par with him from here on in.
And so in that race, it was just a couple of laps in, and down at the new hairpin, or the new part of the track, or the new old part of the track, you had kind of an interesting off, not serious, certainly not dangerous from a crash perspective, but it seemed like everybody was kind of collectively holding their breath while a bunch of bikes went around you. Obviously, I'm sure you weren't very happy about it, but what were your thoughts right after that happened?
It was a strange little crash where we were struggling with initial side grip, and there's not many people that spin out like I did. They usually it would grip, but we just spun out from the rear, and I was trying to get the bike started as quickly as possible. It was just pointed slightly the wrong way, so I had to be careful with the guys coming on the backside not to get collected, but the most important thing was to get back in the race as soon as possible because I knew our pace was strong so we could get back up in there, but I definitely didn't expect to get top five. I just wanted to get going as soon as possible, even in the corner, the next corner, just to the front brake was a little bit high, and the front brake, all you have to do is knock it up and down, it's made that way, so that when you crash it just bends, but I didn't even want to take my hand off the throttle for a second in case I would lose a couple of seconds that would be costly at the end of the race, so I just got my head back down and made my way through, so to get a fifth position was incredible, like Valentino Rossi did last weekend at Donington as well.
Yeah, your charge back was indeed incredible, and watching that, it gave at least me the feeling that if you'd been able to stay up there with Cal, things would have been quite a bit different at the end.
I think a lot of people did think that, but it wasn't the case really. We were struggling chassis-wise, and our lap times weren't that impressive when I was coming through. Had my lap times that I should have been capable of if our chassis was set right, podium wouldn't have been out of the question. Even after the crash, you know, I was able to get fifth, but my lap times were fairly poor by my standards. So I think a lot of people looked at it like I would have been able to run with Cal, but I think it would have been a fight for second that day if Cal's pace was just too strong for us.
And then you had a bit of, well, I think it was a two-week break up until Brno, and I know that Brains wandered off to Akrapovic to see if we can get a little bit more grin out with your exhaust system. And you arrived at Brno. Now, you mentioned that did you say that Cal had already been testing there for a couple of days?
Yeah, they'd been testing there for a few days beforehand, and so had Anthony West. So it served, and Fabian Foley, obviously, so it served them well. And we struggled just to catch up in them. Brno was a different kind of circuit, and they had done the groundwork before we arrived, so I knew right away that I had to get a move on. And it wasn't like me on the weekend. I slid off three times, but that's because I was trying to push and catch up because we're already a step behind. So unfortunately, I went down the road three times you really have to get the balance to stay on board and make progress because me crashing just put us backwards that little bit more from Cal again.
And I believe you crashed out during the warm-up in the morning and done enough damage to your number one bike that you had to swap over to the two. Now, you guys usually keep that thing.
That wasn't right. I think a lot of the commentary teams were saying that, but that wasn't correct at all. The bike was fine. I actually just rode the number one bike in the race, so there was no problem there.
Okay. I was relying on what they'd said. Well, that's good. But still, you guys struggled in the race, and to me at least it looked like chassis issues, but why don't we get it directly from you? You know best.
Yeah, it was chassis. To be honest, in qualifying with new tires in the Honda, it was fine, and with a medium load in the tank, it was fine too, but once the tires wore a little bit, and the fuel load makes this bike very sensitive in a way, so I knew it was going to be tough, and sure enough, after four or five laps, it became a bit of a nightmare to ride. There was really four different stages through the race where I went. I was able to ride it, and then I was able to push through, and then some problems with the front being harsh, and then it was slightly better again. So it was a tough race. I think all the Hondas were suffering with Keenan Sofologu and Andrew Pitt as well on the Warren side. I think the only one was Anthony West, who managed to come through, but we all know what West is like. He just he likes to just grab the bike and wrestle around the track, so it didn't hurt him one bit.
Yeah, I saw a couple of pictures from HRC of Andrew following Miguel, and I said, "Well, there's something you don't see every day." And I believe did Miguel finish the race or did he go out?
Oh, he had mechanical problems, so okay. He had to drop out. But he was definitely riding well to be fighting with Andrew Pitt.
Absolutely.
Andrew's having a tough time at the moment, even. Looking at the championship form, there's only four races left, and he's already 100 points behind Cal, so, you know, mathematically even, he's outside championship winning position, so it definitely hasn't been a perfect year for him, but he'll bounce back.
Yeah, and I know that you'd love to have him up there at the front, at least you'd like to have anybody up there at the front, frankly, to give Cal a good run for his money while you're working on him as well.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know, I think it was maybe six laps from the end, and you're maybe a second or two seconds or maybe three even off of the lead group. And boy, those Kawasaki sure surprised me. But then you passed Cal, and your eyes must have opened up a little bit there.
It was a nice surprise, I guess. It's never nice to see somebody breaking down, but it was a get out of jail free card for me because we had a really tough day. And had Cal finished that race, it was going to be tough for us to get back in the title hunt. So it was fortunate for us that he had a mechanical, but it brought us back in the title race. So it's better for everybody. I don't think anyone wants to see one rider run away with the championship. They want to see it come down to the wire.
Exactly. Yeah, you don't want to see that, but at the same time, it has to give you a little bit of cheer that makes you want to fight even more for the last bit of the races. So,
yeah.
And so you finish that one up, and hopefully you guys have some ideas about where to go from there. And now you're on a pretty decent extended break. It's got about 4 weeks left, if I calculate correctly, maybe more. What are your plans between now and then? I know that you're a hardcore trainer, and you're probably going to be out on the push bike quite a bit, but you got any appearances or anything coming up for now?
Not really. I'm going over to Brands Hatch next weekend for the BSB meeting there, and a few other things on the Red Bull X Riders will be in London on the 23rd of August, I think. And I'm hoping that a few days before I head over to London, I may be able to visit the Tour of Ireland cycling race because the Astana team are there with Armstrong and Columbia are there with Cavendish as well, so it'll be nice to go and see that. And the weekend after that, there's a cycling race called the Lap of the Loch, which is the Loch Ney in Northern Ireland, so I'd like to do that as well. It'll be nice. It's a charity event, so I'm hoping to pencil that in. And one of the most important things of the summer break, me and Cal are both going to be testing at Nürburgring. It's on a track day just, but neither of us know the circuit, so that it's getting down to crunch time. We're both going to get out there. It's the same track day as Cal did before Brno, so it was beneficial, no doubt. So at least we'll be on an even playing field when we begin Nürburgring.
Cool, and is that that's both the Yamaha team and Park Algarve?
I think so.
Okay.
Imagine Foray's coming as well.
Okay. Well, that should be interesting. You know, it's not an official test, but both of you guys out there during a track day, hopefully they're going to leave group open for you guys because you're going to be blitzing around there. Okay, cool. Well, and then, you know, there's been some media and whatnot, and I kind of take it all with a grain of salt about Cal making plans for next year, and I'm just wondering if you're starting to look in that direction as well. Is there anything you can tell us about that?
Well, I keep reading that, you know, with Cal's Moto 2 options, and every article seems to say that I've stated that I don't have any intentions on going back there next year, but that's not necessarily what I said. I said that I was in no rush back, meaning that things would have to be right before I go back to Moto 2, so It's possible for next year if the right deal came together, I would go back there. But the reason that I moved across to World Supersport was with the intention of returning to Moto 2 as a World Supersport champion and showing what I'm capable of in that paddock. So that plan hasn't changed one bit, so I'm just waiting to see if I can get anything competitive there. But I'm also considering superbike options. My theme park, Algarve Honda, are looking to move to superbike as well, and we all know they've done a good job in Supersport, so definitely have to consider that, but right now I'm not sure everything's in the early stages, so just got to play it by ear and see what develops.
Yeah, that's an interesting revelation. I never thought of you guys actually moving up yet, especially with the current super sport success that you've had, but I can certainly see that. Excellent. Well, I look forward to hearing more about that, and hope that in the meantime, over this break, that the boys get a little bit of time off and don't work too hard, because I know they've been cranking away and working the midnight oil. Is Pippa still training with you? Did she make it beyond 3 days?
No, she did the 3 days. She didn't make day four. But, for a price, she managed 3 days along with me. And one day she took the dog out as well, so she wasn't necessarily keeping up. She just about it with the dog in the
list,
but it was fun.
Cool. Well, Eugene, thanks for your time. I appreciate it, and I look forward to talking to you again later on as the season progresses, and have yourself a nice rest, and thanks for taking the time to talk to us.
Oh, there's not a problem.
All right, cheers. Thanks, Eugene.
Cheers. Thanks, man. Bye.
All right. That was Eugene Laverty and Jim Race chatting away last week.
And there were a couple of things in there that, you know, I know that for some people his accent is kind of hard to pick up. There are a lot of people who don't have that issue. But one of the things that was cool that he mentioned in the end that I didn't know about when we were talking about what his potential plans were for next year, you know, he did mention Moto 2 when people were thinking that he was – had said he wouldn't go back to the GP paddock, but I think if he got it, obviously if he got it on top tier team, that was a possibility. But the other one that was really cool that I didn't know about is that Park Algar Honda is potentially looking at a superbike effort for next year, and that would be a big deal. So,
Oh yeah.
Interesting story, and you know it's a great team considering all that they've done, and they're certainly a kind of way satellite team, but it's some of the guys have been around in the racing effort for many years, going back as far as GP. So best of luck to them.
Indeed. And because this is kind of like a silly season type of piece of news, let's talk about the silly season, because things are starting to settle now that Lorenzo has pretty much... I mean, it's not an official announcement yet from Yamaha, but he is staying with Yamaha as far as everybody's concerned.
That's my understanding as well.
I think most of the journals have reported that. But the doors are basically closed in a lot of places, which means that riders can now take a deep breath and start worrying.
But yeah, because I mean that was a big piece of the puzzle that had to fall in place before other people could think about moving around. And, you know, I saw the first report of that, per se, from Matt Roberts before the races even ran, a week and almost 2 weeks ago now. Mm-hmm. And it was on Twitter, no less. And I was like, oh, okay. You know, because nice. Apparently just talked to or done a long interview with Colin Edwards, and that was where the information came from, which is probably pretty solid. So, but yeah, now everybody else has to figure out where they're going.
Well, the funny thing was that Eurosport was saying that the Honda deal is done with Lorenzo, meaning like he's going to Honda.
Right.
And BBC was saying that he's staying in Yamaha. So BBC wins.
Well, you I know, mean, maybe that's an artifact of the fact that Jules and Toby have been slightly outside of that universe mostly for this year.
Right. That's true.
But, I mean, usually, obviously, they're very solid. But you never know. It's been the whole thing's been swirling this year, and it's been amusing to watch, but frankly, kind of difficult to keep an eye on the different paths.
Yeah, you know, it's a couple of people sent in these great interviews with on BBC. BBC had like a 2-hour show that they did a couple weeks ago, and I mentioned it, I think, a couple of episodes of MotoGP OD ago, and I finally got to listen to those. So thank you to John Fajardo. Sorry, dude, I probably butchered that name. John Fajardo and Martin Donington alerted me about this thing, and I got to listen to it, and it's very interesting, especially what Lorenzo had to say about everything, because he's really, really good with the press. He is really, really good with the press. I think he's probably after Valentino Rossi is the next guy. So he's either learning from Rossi, or basically he just has the same kind of elements there where he just knows the right things to say. Because I think half of the things he says are complete BS, but he does such a good job at it. You know, he shows great respect for Valentino Rossi, gives him props for developing the M1 on the Bridgestones, and you know, he's still saying that he didn't really expect to be able to win races against Valentino, which I think is BS, because I think that he went in there last year thinking he's the best. They all do, otherwise, you know, they shouldn't be out there.
Do you? I think I'm still consistently shocked at how different my interpretation of how he was going to be than to how he ended up being.
Lorenzo is instead of like being some kind of whack job screaming kid.
Yeah, and he's turned out to, you know, even so fine. Maybe he's made adjustments in order to fit into the upper echelon paddock, but whatever he's done is great. And you're right. I think a lot of it's kind of BS, and it's the thing that he thinks that people want to hear, but it's still kind of refreshing to see him in these interviews and whatnot.
Well, I think that a lot of the stuff that Rossi says is also BS. And
absolutely.
You know, whatever. So, but there was a couple of things that he said that were that I thought were kind of outstanding or stand out. Was he really wants to make it clear that it wasn't just a money thing about him, you know, playing with Honda and Yamaha. It was really more like testing Yamaha to see, do they really want him there at Yamaha?
Yep.
You know, and that's, it's very easy to be cynical about it and say, oh, that's bullshit. That's total bullshit. He's just going for the big money. But I think there's a lot of truth to that. I mean, it's been a decade since we've had two guys on the same team. You know, this competitive, they're the ones fighting for the championship, especially now after Donington. It's really those two guys that are going to, you know, unless something really crazy happens in the next few rounds, it's
right.
going to be those two guys battling to the end.
Having those two guys be on the same team, and especially on a you know, a good solid bike and a good solid team, is going to be really fun. I mean, to watch. I think it's going to make things very exciting.
Well, it has been, and it is great, and I think that he would be. I can see why he might want to be on a different bike to give himself a little bit more. It's kind of like the whole Ducati Bridgestone strategy. It's like, okay, if we're gonna beat Rossi, we have to have something, a different variable in the formula that he can't control, right?
Right.
But on the other hand, you know. This is something interesting that he said, was that you know, he thinks that Rossi may be nearing his evolution as a rider, whereas he and other young riders will continue to evolve and learn. And this is something that we talked about back in 2007 when Stoner was kicking Rossi's ass, and you know, and we started realizing it wasn't just a bike.
Right.
It took a little while because I think everybody was kind of shocked by that. We have to admit that, but it was, you know, Stoner really took to the Ducati. Nobody else has been able to do it. And I think that part of it is just being able to just adjust. And I think that was one of Valentino Rossi's greatest strengths always, is that he is able to adjust not just to, you know, season after season. I mean, he can adjust in the middle of a race, you know, as a tire goes off and whatever. And, but the main thing is that he's been able to kind of keep up with the technology, keep up with the changes in the bikes much better than other quote unquote old timers.
Yeah,
I mean, the guy's 30. I mean, we were talking about him like he's on his last leg. I think he's going to be racing for another 5-6 years, but at least. But
well, not, if you're Lorenzo, you don't hope that.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, if you don't, you hope not. But on the other hand, if he starts to beat Rossi, it would be fantastic for him to be able to continue.
Sure, sure. I think the point you're kind of making is that Lorenzo thinks that Rossi might be very close to his peak, where the other younger riders aren't necessarily there yet. Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah, including himself, especially. I mean, I think that you know. It's somewhere around 25 that the riders become mature enough where they can utilize their skills in the right way. That's really their maybe not their peak, but they start to reach their true potential.
Right.
You know, we certainly saw it with Nicky Hayden. We saw it with Valentino Rossi, and it could very well be what happens with Lorenzo as well. Both of us, I think, have changed our minds dramatically about Lorenzo since the 250 days. I mean, he just from the very beginning last year, everybody was very impressed, not just with his ability to ride the MotoGP bike, but also just be a great personality and a great rider. And I think he's making the right choice. I think that this is going to be better for the show. And he's going to put an itch under Rossi's butt big time, because
that's very true. I mean, he by doing this, he essentially keeps the fires lit from within the same camp.
Yeah, Yeah, I think Rossi would love for Jorge to leave. As much as he won't say it, I think he would love that, because that's his greatest threat right now is that the equipment he's helping develop is now going into Jorge's hands, and Jorge continues to develop his own riding style, which may, you know, eventually surpass Rossi's ability to ride the M1.
Right. Yeah, no, it's cool. And unfortunately, I have not listened to that interview. Were there any other good snippets you pulled out of there?
You know, Toslin was on there for quite a while, and both Lorenzo and Toslin had nice things to say about each other. But my favorite thing was actually they also had Agostini on there for a little
sure.
bit. And my favorite thing was just he said something really funny, which is that, because everybody's been saying that he has 122 GP wins, and he actually has 123. And he said, you know, with Valentino Rossi coming up so fast, every win counts. So please remember, it's 123.
I love it.
Anyway, so back to silly season. Now that Lorenzo is going to stay at Yamaha, now we've got the rest of the field is starting to kind of fall into, well, not, there's, I don't think there's anybody that's been falling into place. Like Marco Simoncelli is the only person who we know almost 100% is going to the satellite team Gresini.
Right.
We know like 80%, I think Marco Melandri is going there as well. But like Tech 3, for example.
I wouldn't be surprised if they stayed exactly as they are for another year.
But there's so many people vying for spots there. We got Hector Barbera. We got Christopher Mullen apparently talking to them.
I think the person that's probably closest on the edge right now, and I'm not sure a lot of people, unless they're super diehard fans, would disagree, but I think it's probably James Toseland. And if he does move out and, you know, maybe goes to World Superbike or whatever, back to World Superbike, it will be interesting to see who vies for that spot, because it's a very valuable spot. The Tech 3 bikes are probably, out of the entire field, far closer to the true factory bike than any of the other satellite teams.
Although that might change at Ducati, but yeah, you're right. Definitely right now, it's a hot commodity, that bike. No, whether it's the factory or the Tech 3. What do you think about Christopher Mullen? Do you think he'll stay in MotoGP?
It's been really weird with him there, because, you know, I've had ups and downs on my feelings about Suzuki's effort for the last couple of years since we went to MotoGP. And his time, obviously, in there has been up and down, and the only time he's really done really well was in wet races, as we know of. But at Laguna, yeah, sure. But you know, I don't know. I don't know. There isn't enough information that comes out of the Rizla Suzuki camp to get an idea, a gauge on what their principals are thinking. You know what I mean?
I can tell you one thing. There's definitely a lot of information coming out of Loris Caparossi that it's not just a bike.
True.
You know. I mean, all props to Vermeulen for being on there for a while and getting some decent results. But Loris Caparossi is showing that you can do things with that bike that Chris has not done.
Right.
You know?
And I've kind of been following his. For those of you folks that haven't seen it, Chris Vermeulen after every race does a sort of a recap on YouTube. If you search for that, you should be able to find it of the race weekend. And it's hard to gauge his attitude too, how he feels, and where he wants to be, what he wants to do. I don't know. I don't really have a take on it yet.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't think it's going to come down to what he wants to do. I think it's going to come down to whether he can get a ride at MotoGP, because he's on that fine line now.
Yeah. Well, and then there's all the thing is who, because Suzuki hasn't been showing, you know, really great results and whatnot, consistently. The other confusing part of the big shuffle is for next year is with Moto2 becoming a reality, is are people necessarily going to want to move? There's so many bodies that could move. And where is everybody going to go? I think we're going to see an awful lot of this shuffling out process, not during this part of the silly season maybe, but way towards the end as teams become more and more pronounced and announced. I don't know. It's really hard to follow.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's so many riders that are up in the air. We've got Tony Elias, Alex De Angelis, who are almost certainly not going to be staying at Gresini, although we said the same thing about De Angelis last year.
I know.
and that didn't happen. So, but, you know, they're likely to be good candidates to go into the new class. Tony Elias could probably kick some butt.
Yeah, he could.
In the little class. I mean, he's made for the smaller bikes, I think. And he got hurt recently, didn't he?
Tony did?
Oh, no, it was Randy Depunier. That's right, Randy Depunier.
Depunier broke his ankle, which is already pinned now, in a motocross training accident. It was just a few days ago.
Right.
But I believe
every year there's rumors about Depunier going to Tactois because obviously it's a French team.
Yeah, and you never know. He's certainly had a good year, certainly had a good year as compared to some of his prior seasons. The Bridgestones apparently have worked well enough for him, and he's not tossing himself in the kitty litter at every corner. So. That's been great. I believe the word is he should be back for Brno, so he's not going to miss a whole lot of time. If you can break your ankle, you might as well do it now.
Right. Yeah, they're definitely the best time in the season to do it. So, and let's see, who else? We got Nicola Canepa is there's so many rumors about, you know, who might take his spot.
But again, that's the same thing with, you know, the uncertainty of riding Ducati right now. It seems like that team through the years has kind of been just a big churn. It's like you got a couple of new riders every year. But I in the past, I thought a lot of that was down to the direction of Louis Dantin, not so much necessarily the standard for that team, but I think we will probably see at least one new guy in there, if not two. I think Callio, I think, has been doing a pretty good job.
I think Callio will stay. I think Callio has shown so much promise in the early part of the season, understanding the bike before even Nicky Hayden, for example.
Right.
And, you know, he's just had a couple of you know, very unfortunate mishaps, including losing, you know, a knuckle, not a knuckle, but a
whole back finger. Yeah,
yeah, pretty nasty.
That was Assen, right? Yeah, that was Assen.
Yeah, when he was actually due to be in the top six.
Yep.
And but we've got Ayama. We got to have another Japanese rider. Ayama is a great bet to be in MotoGP next year. We got Barbera. We've got Simoncelli coming up. We've got Bautista, who, you know, I mean, Aspar is building supposedly a Ducati team, so now there's going to be even more Ducatis to ruin people's careers with.
part of me is just kind of the wait and see, I'll believe it when I see it thing on that.
On the Aspar?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all, you know, that's all, a lot of timing and money.
Well, I know, but we're talking about silly season, and we're going to start getting more and more silly now.
Okay, well, here's a semi-silly true thing. So I've been assuming all along that over last winter that Honda went and revved up the NSR 250 for the final season to pick off the title with Aoyama. And according – very vociferously, according to Julian Ryder, he says absolutely not. They have not done anything significant to it, certainly not more power. And that was actually on a kind of out of the way forum that he frequents. So, that took me back. I was kind of surprised at that.
Cause that would have been a really good theory actually. It still is a good theory.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, props. Maybe KTM just hasn't, you know, this being the last year. Not KTM, but Aprilia is not putting forth additional development effort or money. They're just trying to let this thing bleed off in the end. That could also be part of it, too. They're not trying as hard.
Yep. And the other thing is that Ayama just really freaking rocks.
Yeah, true.
I think it's probably more to the Aprilia kind of backing off already and getting ready for Moto2 because they're going to be in Moto2. So I think that's really cool.
I think that's a how, that they're going to be there with Honda engines.
Yeah, yeah. They're one main competitor.
Yeah, that should be I've seen some theories that were postulated about it, but Honda will probably not like it if Aprilia starts winning with their engines in the bike.
It'll be odd, definitely odd.
It'll be strange.
But it'll also be the beginning of major manufacturers possibly putting in Moto2 teams despite the fact that they can't bring power plants in, which is, I think, would be even better than we had hoped.
It could very well be. I mean, a lot of people are saying, well, all the satellite teams are going to be there. And I'm like, well, there's not that many satellite teams.
Yeah.
The question is how many of the 250 teams will make the transition. A lot of the crew people that are on the 250 side, maybe not with the RSA bikes, which I'm pretty sure come with their own factory Aprilia people to keep them maintained, or at least from engine wise, maybe chassis as well. Are going to have people familiar with four-stroke engines. It's not that they need to tune the engines because those are going to be done by an outside firm, but the dynamics that are put into a chassis are going to be a little bit different than they are on a two-stroke.
Good point. Yeah.
I think we shall see. I don't know.
Last thing I wanted to talk about in terms of silly season is I think there's been this building wave of a lot of fans who are, I think, hoping that Rossi is going to make another switch to another factory. And, of course, you know, Ducati keeps coming up as Italian and a lot of stuff. Or going to Suzuki to really prove it, whatever. And because there was a great topic about that on Ride On 2. There was another topic on another forum that somebody sent me a link about. I just don't buy that. I just don't see it at all because Yamaha is going to do everything in their power to make sure that when people talk about Rossi, they're going to tie him to Yamaha. And if he went to another marquee and God forbid won another championship, yeah. Yamaha would just be these guys in the middle of his career.
Well, yeah, it would be like, why the hell did you let him go? What were you thinking? Et cetera, et cetera.
Well, no, it's just people will not remember him as being
right.
The guy on Yamaha. They'll remember him for whatever, you know, Team X, whatever.
Yeah, so, I mean, he's got, unless he gets some bug up his butt about, you know, trying to prove his greatness by switching to another mark, there's no point right now. It's not like when he switched from Honda to Yamaha. Where
exactly. He's done it once.
Yeah.
He went to a bike that everybody was expecting to be really difficult to win races on, and won a championship his first year. And you know, why do it? Why does he need to do it again?
Right. And especially if he's going to do it, you know, I don't think there's any point in going to one of the third tier manufacturers. Oh, I can't say it. It's mean. One of the lower performing manufacturers.
Yeah.
That would
yeah.
just seem silly.
Yeah, I mean, not now. What he's after is Agostini's remaining records, and he's gonna have at least until the end of 2011 before he can reach those things. Thinking realistically, with Jorge breathing down his neck and Stoner still around kicking ass, and you know Pedrosa being healthy again, and you know lots of young riders coming up the ranks. I think that's probably a lot more important to him than switching marquees again and trying to prove anything. And the other thing is that Yamaha will just not let it happen. They'll do anything
right.
that he asks, you know. and that's why it's going to be hard to be his teammate. And I think that Lorenzo knows that, and he's just kind of sticking around hoping that it's not going to last too long.
Yeah, and he's certainly mentioned more than a few times that he knows that Rossi's going to be around for a while, and then that's probably one of the primary reasons too that he was thinking about going to another team so he could be his own number one. But all in all, I'm happy with the way that it's ended up with him. If that is indeed the case, that with him staying. So
yep,
all good, and Rossi as well. Let's have some stability. Everything else has been changed around so damn much.
Yeah, definitely. So I was reading, have you read the GP Week thing that we...
Michael Scott. I did leaf through it. For some reason, it's really hard for me to read these online magazine versions.
Where you have to like zoom in, scroll around, and like then zoom out and hit it.
Yeah, I'm sure it's really good.
It's difficult. It's great stuff because it's very compact.
Right.
And they had this great little thing about where they asked all the writers to say something about writers and team managers and just various motorcycle related people, Paul Butler among others, to just say something about Dunnington, since it's basically off the calendar for the next 5 years.
Yeah.
And you know, they were all really, some of them were nice, and we were just like, I don't really remember much good here. It rains a lot.
Yeah.
You know? but then here's what Stoner had to say on Dunnington, okay?
Yeah, go.
Are you ready, British fans? Because this one's going out to you, okay?
Careful.
He says, yeah, I don't mind leaving Dunnington Park. I'm disappointed we're still coming back to England next year.
Don't
ask me what the problem is with hostile fans. Maybe it's because I beat Rossi here and they didn't like that. But even when I'm riding my scooter in the paddock, people are jeering at me and giving me two fingers. Well, they could shove it up their ass. So there's Stoner. And actually, he does go on to say, I'm looking forward to going to Silverstone. So he kind of, maybe he forgot that Silverstone is in England. and he's going to get more fingers and jeering.
But
I like the fact that he speaks his mind. Just, you know, maybe not quite so bluntly.
he has a remarkable talent to get the Brits up in arms and moaning about his whinging and all that,
right,
as they call it over there. It doesn't take much, and they'll just go. I'm sure when people start hearing about that, or maybe I'll point a few Brits at it and get their pickings for next year, next week.
There's definitely a back and forth with that guy and the Brits.
I think he enjoys getting them to tilt windmills. You know,
nice.
It's like their buttons are easy to push, so. That's funny. And maybe he doesn't like, you know, people giving him shit in the paddock. I can understand that too.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I enjoy the honesty. I just think that, you know, he should also be thinking of his team and what
true.
This means to sponsors and all that kind of stuff.
That's true. Still makes me laugh.
Yeah. And speaking of Australians, let's talk about, before we leave.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Matt Mladen.
Matt Mladen has indeed announced his retirement at the end of 2009, not without some acrimony. I imagine he's not too pleased with the way that the AMA series is being run in the States, but I think also it's pretty clear that he wants to spend time with his family. He's been doing this thing for an awful long time, and he's certainly made his point and made his mark in U.S. racing, probably the best ever in the AMA. So good for him, and enjoy.
Yeah, and you know, it's perfect timing, really. I mean, he's what, 37?
Yep.
Getting hurt at this age would really not be as it'd be a much bigger deal than if he was, you know, 27.
Right.
And and with all the rules and the tracks that are coming on board online, and him being involved with all the safety regulations, I think he sees the writing on the wall is that the series is becoming less about, they're not listening to the writers, basically, and he's going to win this
right.
championship, so what a great time to retire, you know, being able to win and retire. You know, He's a guy that there's always going to be questions about because he.
Well, that's the big thing. Yeah, is why didn't he go to World Supers or he spent some time in a brief period of time in GPs on the Kajiva team back in the 93, I think it was.
I remember you actually did this great little quiz on Ride On 2 where you posted a picture of him and I think it was. Chile?
No, it was him and I want to say Poland, but that wasn't it. It was.
It was definitely at Poland.
I remember that. That was a couple of years ago.
Yeah, it was a long time ago. It was in the beginnings of Ride On 2. And he had that crazy,
hairdo,
hairdo and whatever. And he was a very strong believer that you can't be a champion without a
top team.
A top team, and he wasn't on a top team in MotoGP, and I guess he probably couldn't get a top ride with Superbike, so he just went to AMA where he got, really good support.
I think David put it best for MotoGP Matters when he talked, because he did a little piece on Matt's retirement, and he said, because Kaczynski had come on board the Kajiva team back in 93, and he said all of a sudden Matt was the third guy in a two-guy team. and so that wasn't, I can't even remember off the top of my head who the other teammate was there at the time. That was the one we were just talking about. It'll come to me. We'll talk about, I'll remind you next week. I'll find that picture.
It wasn't Mamola, was it?
No. It was an American, and it was somebody that had, Chandler maybe? I don't know. Crap.
Chandler. Oh, interesting. Yeah. You know what? I think it was Doug Chandler.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah,
they both look so young.
Yeah,
they both had some serious like '80s hair.
Flock of seagulls.
Yeah, exactly. Flock of haircuts. So he's off. It will kind of open things up in the AMA series as far because it's been dominated for so long by Yoshimura first with Matt and then with Ben and now with Matt again. We'll have to see what shakes up with AMA because they're having some issues right now.
It's really a shame because they're going to be struggling next year for Matt Mladen makes a great star story power. No matter what.
Yeah, they won't have the same star power that they had before. Not that's a lot of it's been controversial and you wonder, a lot of people, the old saying that there's no such thing as bad publicity. Well, I think there is when that's all you've got.
Right.
Even though the racing has been really good, I've watched pretty much all the races, and I've seen the races this last weekend in Kansas, the Daytona Sport Bike race two was great. That was a really fun race to watch. So, with Matt not racing at Kansas last weekend, Larry Pegram took the win in both American Superbike races. So, there's not any real standouts there, and it'll be interesting to see if somebody does come along.
So that's, I think, it. We'll come back next week and we'll do a Brno preview.
Okay.
And we'll see what else is up in the news. And before we go, I just wanted to mention that Peter Lentz, his website now has a video podcast, so I'll put a link to that. It's good to see him. It's so funny because he's a kid. He's totally a kid.
But he's a mature.
And he's totally, so there's one side of it that's just totally a kid. He's goofing off and stuff. Yeah. And then the other side is he's just a totally mature racer. He talks the talk, walks the walk.
Yeah.
And
I caught the video that you're talking about. Somebody posted it right on to and.
It's so cool.
Yeah, it is cool. Look at there, and he's got one of those fixators on his leg. And every time I look at one of those things, I just cringe. And we'll get it off soon.
He's 12. But, it's just crazy. He's still only 12 years old.
Yeah, good on him.
So we'll put a link to that. Andrew Wheeler did a really nice photo slideshow for Matt Mladen's retirement kind of thing. So we'll put a link to that. And that's it. And we'll chat next week then.
Rock and roll. All right. Thanks, Jules.
All right. Thank you very much.
Talk to you later.
Good night. Ciao.
Bye.